Voices Radio Network.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, how you been, man?
Not bad. Very, very busy. I'm a bit sore at the moment.
Huh? From training or?
No, crashed my car.
What? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. A bit banged up. It was, when was it now? It was last Thursday evening.
Okay. What happened?
Just a momentary lapse of concentration, stop start heavy traffic, and I'm not quite sure who hit who first, but the result of that is my car is unrepairable.
Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Shit happens, but I took a pretty heavy knock to the head.
Ooh, and what did you hit it on?
The windscreen.
Oh wow, okay.
I was leant forward at the time. I was just adjusting myself in the seat. And like I say, I don't know if the guy behind me hit me first or I hit the car in front first, but the result was I smashed the windscreen in my head.
Ooh, did you get checked out and everything?
Ambulance was called, had a quick roadside checkout. I'm all right, a bit out of sorts, but I'm okay.
Okay.
But it sort of messed me up quite badly, so I've had to hire a car. To finish off, because I've got a bucket load of military work on at the moment. And then obviously messing around now, trying to find a new car and sorting everything out with the insurance. And the car is actually about 130, 140 miles from where I live.
Oh, that's not good.
So I'm going to have to drive down there now tomorrow or Friday to collect all my stuff out of the car before they send it to be crushed or whatever they're going to do with it, send it to the scrap yard.
Yeah.
I must admit, the insurance were actually pretty good, to be fair. Within an hour, I was off the road, on the back of a wagon, and being dropped off at a car hire place. So, I can't grumble, really.
Yeah, that's not bad, man. Were you, in the city or in the country at the time?
I was on the motorway just on the outskirts of Birmingham. People in England were very familiar with the M40, M42 setup, and it was there.
Okay.
It's a particularly notoriously busy stretch of motorway. And usually back for congestion. It was just one of those things.
Everybody else seemed to be okay too?
Yeah, no one seriously hurt, just damaged vehicles really, which I suppose, you know, that's the best thing at the end of the day. That's why you have insurance. But
yeah,
it was a hassle I could have done without, to be fair.
Right? Yeah, always.
Yeah, it's just one of them, isn't it? So I'm in a disgustingly awful hire car at the moment. But now they've declared mine a write-off. I either have to pay for it myself or it will have to go back, and I need to sort new transport out.
So I'm sure they have it like the US. You can get like a rental car type thing while you find a new car, or are you just going to go straight out and just buy something new now?
Well, they will, the insurance will no longer cover the cost of a rental car as of at the moment. You see, they've rung me today and said, right, the car's a write-off, what do you want to do? Now, I do have the option, because it's a financial write-off, basically it's uneconomical to repair based on the value of the car.
Right.
I do have the option of buying the car off them as part of the settlement, and then the balance of the settlement being given to me in cash and repairing the car myself.
Okay.
But I have to make that decision. But as soon as I make that decision, they will no longer cover the cost of my rental car.
Oh. They're like, you got a car, just fix it.
So I've just held them off a couple of days while I make some arrangements and sort myself out a little bit. So, because as soon as I say, right, okay, just send me the money for the car, do what you want with it.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to have to get to Birmingham to collect my things out of the car, and I'm going to have to hand the rental straight back in. So I'm just playing for a couple of days' time, just to give me a bit more time to organize transport.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass, man.
I fucking hate shopping for cars.
yeah. I've got one that I like, and I just stick with it now. Now, this is not my car. It's not a British car. It's known as a British car, but it's German engineering. Mini Cooper. Do you guys have a lot of minis over there?
Yeah. Are you a hairdresser, or do you actually
Or do I what?
like sleeping with men?
No, but I love my little car, man. It's fast around corners. It's like driving a go-kart basically, and it's got some decent pickup to it too.
My wife's got a little Fiat 500 convertible, and I actually do borrow that thing. And they are nippy little things. Those little mini cars don't half fly around corners.
Oh my gosh, Mrs. Dave Crossland, I want to see a picture of Dave in a Fiat 500.
Well, I actually have to put, if I sit properly in it, I have to put the roof down and stick my head out.
I gotta see a picture of this. This would be great.
I do have one somewhere. But I was quite large when I actually picked it up from London and drove it, and I had to drive it back with the driver's window down so I could hang my arm out and the roof down so I could stick my head out of the roof. It's sort of like red line across my forehead because everything was coming up the windscreen and then hitting the top of my head.
Guys, if you don't know what a Fiat 500 is, you've got to look it up, because they are seriously like the tiniest little car that there is. Really, that cracks me up, man.
So now I'm on the hunt for a new vehicle, but I have no idea what to get.
Okay, man. Well, that doesn't sound like fun. You know, this is like a week or so ago now. You had messaged me a topic idea, and then of course we didn't get to record. I was traveling and whatnot. The topic was life after competition, and I feel like seeing that you've experienced a closed head injury since then, have done 1,000 presentations and everything else. You probably don't even remember sending that to me, but no, you did.
I do. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just. I mean, I know I said to you, I actually did say post competition, but in general, it was more just dealing with the come down almost of wherever we've got to, be that you've gone on a journey for size or you're competitive or you're just winding back a little bit because other things have got in the way, or you're dealing with injury, you're dealing with anything that prevents you from maintaining your physique.
What's the best way, in your opinion, to cope with that period?
I don't think there is a best way. But I mean, I do think it's important for people to realize you're not the only one that feels like you do. And it can almost feel like a grieving period.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
I mean, I actually spoke to Ian Harrison about this a couple of weeks ago, and we were chatting, and he was just saying it wasn't too bad for him because he had a more of a natural regression.
Okay.
But now he is downsized. And I mean, Ian is lean and fit, but you wouldn't recognize him as the man he used to be when it came to his physique. And he's like, you know, even now you get those little pangs when you see someone moving big weights in the gym or you see a big lad and you just sort of think, God, he used to be there. But you don't want to be that guy that says, I used to do that, or I used to be that big, because it sounds so sad.
Oh, no, absolutely. How many times have you heard that?
It's the truth. You know what I mean? You just don't want to be that guy. But I think there is, and we've touched on this before about people investing so much in the external, they forget to invest in the internal. Guys that are heavy users that are forced to come off for medical reasons or due to injury or just due to age and a buildup of whatever, I think probably find it a little bit harder because they're also dealing with the fact that they're now no longer using or they're only on a TRT base only.
Yeah.
And if that's more of an ethical and more of a long-term health decision, then you also have that added problem then that you're dropping size because you're not maintaining your drug regime. But you know if you do maintain your drug machine, that size will come back.
Yeah.
So you end up with that internal battle then as well about, oh, shit, you know what I mean? I'm getting weaker. But if I just up that, it'll come back.
Sure.
But you've also got to, you know, if you make that decision, particularly if you make that decision for health reasons, then it's something you really, really need to stick to. Now, sometimes those health reasons, you don't have a choice. You know, it's stop or you're going to have problems. But for those that have just felt that, you know, enough is enough, it's time to walk away, then it's a bit harder because you've not got that noose hanging around your neck, so to speak, of the fact that if I do this, I'm going to have an issue.
Yeah. And regardless, if you're asking yourself, should I do this or should I not do this? I really want to do this, and you're considering it, and health implications are even a potential, then you really have to step back and ask yourself, really, like, what am I doing here, right?
Well, yeah, I think you've got to ask yourself, what are you doing it for? And we assess risk quite often when we start on our drug journeys, but we then tend to stop doing that
We do. I've done that for sure.
because it's now just something we do. So we don't then reassess risk until we're forced to, usually because of an injury or because of a health problem. And it is hard, and you've just got to let it go, but it's not easy. I don't have any real tips apart from just trying to. I think people go through several processes at once here. So you've got the chemical element, which is a temptation-based thing, but also the fact that there are changes to our brain chemistry that can create an element of dependence. So you've got that to deal with. You've got then the psychological impact of not being as strong. You've got the visual impact of not looking the way you used to look. And unfortunately, you've got the society impact that if you were a person that engaged in social media or used social media in any way to promote yourself, then all of a sudden that impact's gone as well.
Yeah.
And
Same
you'll be looking
thing
at
with
social.
like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right, go on.
I was gonna say same thing with like it go even just the impact of going in the gym. If you like posting pictures of yourself and you look great, it's the same thing as going in the gym and looking great and walking around in a tank top and feeling like you're the biggest guy. Same instance there.
Yeah, and the problem is obviously there's always somebody else posting pictures, and we have generally a skewed perception of ourselves anyway, so the comparatives then become worse, and it can be nigh on torture. Sometimes it's better to step away. For me, the biggest issues were always strength related. I didn't like the fact that I was getting weaker.
I could see that, sure.
I still struggle with that now. I accept it, but I don't like it. I don't like going from being able to bench five plates for reps to be down to three plates for a couple sort of thing, and I don't like that loss of power.
No, I've got a potential solution here. Now, this is, and I'm sure you think this too. What about setting new goals? Goals
There
that are
is,
healthy,
yeah. There is a distraction technique where you focus on something that's not comparative. I used to use that too with my training when I dieted. So when I started to diet, I changed my training so I couldn't compare my pre-diet training to my on-diet training. So there's definitely that element. There is that element of distraction, focusing on a new goal, focusing on a new sport, focusing. But unfortunately, you're gonna come across, if you're still involved in the environment, you're gonna come across direct comparatives. And what's worse is the social structure impact, because you get people, didn't you used to be bigger? You used to be stronger. And it's like, for fuck's sake, please don't remind me.
What
But
happened? What happened to him?
you've been ill.
Yeah.
But then you also get people post-comp who struggle with losing condition. And I've seen people almost, well, for want of a better term, they have developed eating disorders because they can't cope with going out of condition. And they constantly try to maintain that condition, which obviously limits progression anyway, but it's unhealthy as well. So there's all sorts of areas that feed into this problem. Injuries probably about injuries one of a catch 22, because it's very, very sudden. So it does take you by surprise, where if you've made a conscious decision, you can sort of time it a little bit, and you can sort of manage a degrading of your physique almost. You can tone it down and you can slowly bring things down. With an injury, that's a very sudden impact. But at the same time, you also have then the cause that you are injured. So you have a fight. It's not a decision you've made. It's taken out of your hands. It's beyond your control. But in that, comes frustration, and from frustration can come stupid ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've suffered from a few in my time when I've had an injury and I've just gone, fuck it. And only made things worse, a lot worse in a couple of occasions.
I can see that. I think we probably all have. But can you give us an example of what someone might do in a situation like that?
I can give you an example of myself.
Okay.
I threw me back out. It wasn't anything particularly major, or I didn't. And it, well, to be honest, it wasn't. No, it wasn't that major. It was just a muscular strain. All I needed to do was give it a couple of weeks, give it a bit of rest. But I braced up and continued. Changed, obviously, didn't do anything directly loaded my bag and switched to stuff like hack squat instead of free bar squat and all the rest of it. But I hadn't accounted and hadn't been fully aware of how poorly my lower core was activating at the time. The result of my back not working properly because it was in pain meant that my psoas got heavily overloaded.
I've been there.
The net result of that was my psoas went into spasm and crushed my femoral nerve, and that was why I was in a wheelchair for a long portion of UC2.
Oh.
It wasn't actually my back. I mean, we did at the time think it was my back, but, you know, obviously hindsight and experience and knowing what's gone on now, I now know it was actually the fact that I didn't back off when I should have done. And what would have been a couple of weeks of light training and taking it steady ended up being 7 months of agony and really struggling.
Have you ever had massage work done on your psoas?
Oh, Tom.
You have.
Horrible, man.
Brutal.
Oh, I have a particularly efficient physio, but he's also a very good at generating pain.
Right.
What's even worse is you'll be laid there with your eye closed and you'll be gritting your teeth and grabbing the bench because you're all one not to punch in one for the amount of pain he's causing you.
Right.
And then you open your eyes and look down and he's just touching you with a fingertip. And you're like, how the hell can this unassuming boy next door, skinny football playing fucker cause that much pain with his fingertip?
Yeah.
I've got Chris, my physio, Chris Oldfield is called. He's you wouldn't think anything to look at him. We nicknamed him the baby faced assassin. But oh man, he's brutal. He really is. But he's very, very good.
That's awesome.
I mean when I had that psoas problem, I went through 3 spinal blocks. And I went to see Dorian's old physio, who came close to the problem. He was convinced it wasn't my back, but he wasn't sure where it was.
Okay.
And then I went to Chris, and within 2 sessions, he turned around and went, "It's this." Da, 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 and he just touched it with his finger and then peeled me off the ceiling.
Wow.
And he fixed me, well, relatively quickly, shall we say. But I started to get an impact and a benefit from his work within a couple of weeks of that.
That's nice, man. I've had a similar experience with a woman out here, Becky at Tricovery, it's called, the place where she works. It's brutal, man, to get your psoas worked on. I'll tell you what, I could feel relief same day. Like just stepping off the table, I could tell it was a little better.
The one I really hate is diaphragm.
I'm not sure what that is.
The diaphragm that sits between your lungs and your stomach. Have you ever had that worked on?
I don't know if I've had her work on that before.
Oh, no, that's horrible. I don't know if I'm weird or not, but I can't stand any work on my pecs or my core.
Okay, I don't mind pecs. They get really tight and that helps. It hurts, but the core
back,
stuff.
Shoulders, arms, legs, fine. Touch my pecs or my core. It's not even a discomfort thing. It's more a trigger thing where it's just like, I just want to punch him. I have to literally lay there and sit on my hands just to remind myself because I just hate it. I absolutely loathe it.
Yeah.
That and dentists sticking their hand in my mouth. I hate that as well.
I can relate to that.
I don't mind the dentist work.
Yeah.
That's not the issue. It's them putting the fingers in my mouth that annoys me.
Yeah.
I've got to lay there and keep saying to myself, don't bite, don't bite, don't bite, don't bite.
It'd be so easy to bite.
yeah, you bugger, get off. But yeah, just clamp down and remove a finger.
Yeah.
You put your hands in my mouth, you bugger.
Yeah, but I feel like this conversation, though, it's good because, you know, we have some guys that are listening that are in this position now, but we also have people that are setting themselves up for it down the road. So no matter what, this is going to come down to everybody at some point or another is going to have to make the decision to stop doing what they're doing the way that they're doing it if they're pushing to an extreme. And I think that they can better prepare if they're younger right now, they can better prepare for that time now so that it doesn't hit them like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, I mean, diversity is a good thing. Getting involved in other active sports is a good thing, or distraction is a very good thing. I mean, one thing that helped me was naturally is my workload increased quite dramatically. So that was going to create problems with training frequency and dedication to what I was doing anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. And it's difficult as well because you seem to get people that go to the other extreme where if they can't, they just give up. They go from, you know, maintaining a good physique and a healthy lifestyle to living off McDonald's and not moving off the sofa. And it's like, it's finding that balance. But I do agree that the suggestion of diversion is excellent. Getting into a different sport, getting into something else, particularly something if your size then is a negative for you.
Yeah.
So that you're not then pushed towards trying to maintain a healthy amount of size or an unhealthy amount of drug use to maintain that size, because you can then, you know, it's not of benefit to what you're actually doing now.
Yeah.
But I think one of the keys to this is keeping yourself grounded in what you do.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen guys, I can think of one person in particular to use as an example. Shelby Starnes, you know, he was a competitive bodybuilder in the 212 division, and I had trained with him for about 4 years. He retired not this year at the Chicago Pro, but the year before. And from there, he stopped doing everything that you would do to do extreme bodybuilding. You know, he stopped like forcing the food down and everything, but he continued to eat clean. He continued to train. He backed his training schedule down a little bit and, removed anything from his body that would be harmful, began focusing on health. And interestingly, he was able to do this without taking like that. Cause I've seen guys who try to like lose weight extreme, you know, like I'm going to downsize now. And then they just like rip off a ton of muscle real quick. He just let it kind of transition. And he weighs about the same now as he did when he competed. Obviously body composition is different, but he's taking like really good care of his health. He's focusing on his business, other areas of life, and he's just becoming more well-rounded and taking advantage of the things that he couldn't do when he was so focused.
And that's one of the dangers with being overly focused is that you've got nothing else in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that's talked about much, but high-end athletes struggle with this because they're known as being a tennis player or a runner or whatever it is the sport they do. They're not known for anything else.
Yeah.
And if they have no diversity in their life, and quite often they don't because they're at the top of the sport because they focused on that so much, depression is a big issue for them and a lot struggle. You don't hear it, and they just disappear because they just struggle and fall into the background and I don't know, sort of die to a degree. And I think that is a real risk, that you can die a little bit inside. Those that seem to have some diversity about what they do, they can just shift focus somewhat.
Yeah.
Or spread that focus across 3 or 4 different things and then carry on.
Yeah. With this sport. Yeah, I mean,
for those that are going through it, you're not alone. It is normal. And many people experience it at whole different levels of the sport. And it is something that you've really just sort of got to find a way through. But like you said, diversifying and creating other interests, and sometimes interests that might be away from that lifestyle, are just as healthy.
Yeah. And I think it could be important too to try to incorporate things outside of the sport now, because, you know, I think there is something to be said. You know, before I got into bodybuilding, I went to school for art and I was a photographer. And when I decided I no longer wanted to do that, I realized, like, well, I don't have much else in my life. Like, I was a photographer and that was it. So losing that, I lost my identity. Now I try to keep those lessons in mind with bodybuilding, where I do try to be more well-rounded. I try to have interests outside of just my own training. You know, I do a lot of different things, and I think that's a good way to set yourself up for success, you know, in the sport, finding, because it does force you to kind of create a balance or a harmony in your life. But then it gives you a lot of other interests that it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. And you know, they can be quite diverse as well. I mean, I know Aaron Hudson, he still wrestles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked about him that last episode. That's right, he does. Yeah,
he's very passionate about his wrestling. So obviously when he's training or his bodybuilding takes a back, so he flips over to the wrestling a bit more.
There you go.
It's an area. It'd be interesting to hear people if they have things that they've done that they found were very, very beneficial.
Yeah.
I mean, I just sort of threw myself into work. Yeah. Well, work and family, to be fair. And I try, you know, Monday to Friday is work, and then Saturday and Sunday is pure family.
Nice.
I try and keep it that way as much as possible.
I like that. And it gives you pleasure. Hey, what do you say we take a quick break here, come back and knock out some questions? We got a bunch of them over at the message board.
Yeah, sure.
All right, guys, we will be back in just a minute. Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due. He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio. And thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. First question we have today is from UC Suma over at the message board. Guys, if you want to take part, please do. We would love to have your participation. It gives us content for the show. So if you go over to the Advices Radio website, that's advicesradio.com, there's a little icon to click on the message board in the bodybuilding discussion section at the top. There are stickies for all the shows. You'll see one for Blood, Sweat, and Gear, Muscle Minds, Clinical Muscle, and Drugs and Stuff. That's where we're going today. Or you can just go directly to forum.advicesradio.com. So UC Suma says, absolutely loving the show, gentlemen. Dave, what are your thoughts on Osterine for female competitors? Any experience with Osterine in general, male or female? And watch outs in term of duration and dosage?
I've seen it be quite positive in females. Obviously running a slightly lower dose, usually around the 10 milligram to start with anyway. From a male point of view, it can be suppressive if you start pushing that dose up. I've had a couple of cases of full suppression from SARMs in the past.
What did you say? What was that last thing you said?
I've had a few cases of full suppression from SARMs in the past.
Full suppression, so like totally shut down.
It's totally shut down. People that have come to me because they've been totally shut down off the back of SARM cycles. I mean, granted, they were pushing the doses a bit. So, they were in excess of a combined 100 milligrams a week, or 100 milligrams a day sort of thing. But Ostarine works quite well for females. Obviously, suppression is not such a big issue for them. And because of how it works and it's very low androgenicity, as it's hardly got anything at all, to be fair, it's very, very mild from that point of view as well. It's a selective tissue receptor. So, obviously, it's a lot more selective in that it targets muscle tissue more over than anything else. And so virilization is not an issue,
okay,
to a large extent. I mean, like everything, these things are dose dependent as well. But I've actually, as an intro drug for women, I've seen it be quite impressive.
I've seen a few guys actually use it. Men's physique competitors that had previously been natural and they wanted to try something out but not push it too far going into like a full all on cycle. I've seen a little bit of results from it. I can't say it's been anything grand for men. Have you seen good results for men?
The cases where I have seen good results is because they were already particularly efficient moving into it.
Okay.
So these were guys that were already training very, very hard and had a good training knowledge base and already had a very good understanding of diet, and diet was good. And actually had quite good physiques to start with in the first place. Yeah. And I've seen them respond quite well. But your average gym goer who's looking, I mean, let's be straight with it, okay? The vast majority of people that use because it fills holes in the training and diet, and that's why they use in the first place.
Okay.
You're not going to get much out of SARMs if you're using them in that sort of environment, because they're just not powerful enough at the end of the day.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the next question. This is from a guy. His board name is MK677 Santa.
Okay.
We could use some stocking stuffers. He says, "Hey guys, thanks for doing this show."
Yes.
"And Dave, I really enjoyed Under Construction and Under Construction 2. I remember you being on one of the very first episodes of Advices Radio." We were just talking about that recently.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
"Question regarding an upcoming change I'm a little concerned about. I'm 27 years old, male, in the USA, and running TRT, roughly 140 milligrams of test sip per week. I am self-prescribed, but I do want to come above board and go to a clinic. However, I don't think clinics will give me the time of day until I'm 30. Which, yeah, I've heard of a lot of them turning people away until they're even 34 years old.
Right.
For estrogen control, I've been using a product recommended by in J. Campbell's TRT manual called AIFM. It's a topical AI. This product is now discontinued and I'm on my last bottle, but it should last another 4 to 5 months. I have both Arimidex and Aromacin on hand, but think I want to switch to Aromacin when I have to. Do you have any thoughts or ideas on how to minimize any bad side effects from crashing my estrogen while I figure out my Aromacin dose? Do you have any recommendations for a starting dose protocol? I am thinking of taking 12.5 milligrams Aromacin the day after my TRT shot. I pin on Sunday and Thursday. So I will be taking my Aromacin Monday and Friday. Since I read somewhere that estrogen peaks with peak testosterone release. I only need to use one pump of AIFM a day, low dose. It's a low dose, keeping my E2 between 27 to 33, which I am comfortable with. I know when I crash it too low, I was at 15.8, I felt awful. I just want to avoid crashing or going too high with estrogen as I switch AIs. Thank you.
It'd be interesting to know what his test levels are running at. Because if his dosing seems to be quite simple at 104, or so say quite correct at 140 milligrams a week.
Yeah.
He's there or thereabouts. So I would expect that his test levels are sitting within range and he is running a TRT that is, you know, quite in line with supporting natural ranges as opposed to going above or high end all the time.
Yeah.
So generally with that, for most people, estrogen control is not really a big issue. But I did note that when he talked about his estrogen levels, he's definitely very much on the low end of scale.
Mm.
And to me, that's a bit too low.
Yeah.
Don't forget that estrogen supports a lot of functions in the body. One of the big ones being keeping a healthy lipid profile. So it'd be interesting to know what his lipid profile's doing in relationship to his TRT.
Hmm.
And whether that can be improved by allowing estrogen to run a little bit higher.
Okay.
If anything, I would be tempted to take the opportunity to allow his estrogen to go as high as it wants to do naturally and see where it's sitting.
Hmm. Really?
Instead of, because if he's only running 140 milligrams a week, he's never going to get very high anyway.
That's a good point.
You know, and our estrogen and testosterone levels naturally peak and trough throughout the day. So it's all right saying that I'm going to test at a specific point because it's going to be at its highest, but that's not always a true indication of what's going on. If he was to go to an AI, it would be aromasin for the simple reason that ADEX is negative on lipids and you're talking about a protocol that's going to be for a very long time.
Yeah.
He's sub 30. So he's potentially looking at 40, maybe 50 years of TRT.
That's a long time.
You don't want to be running ADEX for 40, 50 years because your lipids are going to be completely fucked.
Yeah.
So aromasin obviously is a lot gentler on lipids, has very little impact, so would be my drug of choice. Dosing-wise, yes, if he is going to start, I would look at 12.5 milligrams, as he has stated.
Okay, so taking it, that was after the shot. So you take the shot on Sunday, take the pill on Monday?
Yes, okay. Yes, and I would concur with that.
Okay.
But I would be tempted to let it run its natural course. More than anything else, just to find out what boundaries we're looking at. I mean, oral topication is, generally speaking, only about 10% efficient.
Hmm.
So he might find that his natural E2 levels are not going that high. And he should be. I generally sit mine around the 50 to 60 mark on my TRT.
Okay.
That's completely comfortable. No estrogen slides, you know, no impact from that at all. And I know everyone's slightly different, but I'm also concerned about the long-term impact of running TRT on my lipid profile. So that's why I let it sit where it sits. So it's definitely worth taking the time and taking the opportunity to allow it to elevate and just see where it goes naturally. At the end of the day, any issues will be rapidly rectified with what he's got medication-wise anyway.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And he's not, you know, you're not going to get estrogen levels of 200 on a dose of 140 a week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'd be surprised if it gets over 100. And you know, male range is quite broad spectrum, to be fair, but the doses he's running at are low end. And it wouldn't surprise me if he maintains those doses for a long period of time and keeps it down that end and it doesn't become problematic in a period of time.
Yeah. We got a question here about Dave Palumbo's product called Kidney Stuff. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, no.
I'd heard of it, but I...
Is it a recent thing, or has he had it out for a while?
I think he's had it out for a while. I'm trying to read what's on the label here, and there's nothing listed at his website. They have just kidney stuff. You can purchase it. I'll do a real quick Google search for it and see if I can find it off of Dave's, elsewhere. Let's see what we come up with here. Kidney stuff. Here we go. So it looks like it's about, what is he charging here? Looks like it's $50 for a bag of it. Yeah. Okay. So you can buy it. I'm looking at it directly at the store. Let's see why the stuff works. Whole food plant, essential omega-3s. I'm not seeing any kind of list of what's actually in it. Let's see, golden flax, wheat germ, bovine kidney powder, white kidney bean powder. Research has shown that kidney beans have more in common with our kidneys than just their shape. They have been proven again and again to have healthy influence on our kidneys. Carrot roots and beetroot powder. I'm not sure about this one, though. I can say across the board, I don't know people that are turning to this product, but I can't speak against it either, though.
There doesn't seem to be anything that's jumping out there as being particularly amazing.
Yeah.
And I know there's no actual studies on the product itself.
Okay.
But obviously, you know, it's a supplement, so why would there be
true
anything on it?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's difficult to say is the honest answer. And there's a couple of ingredients in there, though I know there's some suggestion of supporting a kidney. I would have to actually have a look and see if there's anything to back that up.
Yeah.
Which I'm not aware of at this time, but then I haven't particularly, that's not a negative, it's just because I haven't looked.
Okay, so we don't have necessarily a good answer to that one, but...
There's nothing in there that's going to do any harm.
There you go.
But I would suspect that there's nothing in there that's going to be particularly miraculous either.
Okay.
Really, if you're looking for a product that's going to support internal organs, I'd be looking at glutathione.
Okay.
That's not cheap, unfortunately. And you're going to need liposomal. Because it's bioavailability, unfortunately, it does stink something chronic. It's got a very sulfur smell.
Really?
Yeah, liposomal glutathione has a very sulfur smell. But I would have said for organ protection, that's probably the best single product that there is.
Okay. You're using that now, right?
No, I'm experimenting with I will be experimenting very shortly with a different version.
Okay.
I don't want to say because it's in conjunction with somebody else.
Okay.
His supply has arrived, so he's going to cap it up and send it up to me.
Interesting. Well, do keep me posted. I mean, personally, I'll be interested.
So, I have a kidney issue, so it would be interesting to see if I see any improvement on my numbers.
Absolutely.
Running it. But, that would be, if you're looking for a kidney supplement, then that would be my go-to. It would be glutathione.
Okay. We missed one of the questions that were on one of our threads that we had put out on Instagram. So I'm going to dive over there for a minute and grab this one. This is from Troy Anderson Fitness. He says, to hit true TRT dose, would an interim period be needed to allow half-lives to drop to the dosage of true TRT before implementing further doses? how frequently would the doses need to be implemented then to prevent accumulation and entering a super physiological level? And what doses would you suggest for true TRT? So many doses are thrown around nowadays.
The only problem with true TRT is that if you're going to try and mimic natural function, then you're going to have to drop an injection in the morning of Nion test base with a little bit of test prop. And then you're going to have to make sure that test base drops out by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
What?
Because that's how our natural peaks and troughs run. So, you know, you can't mimic natural levels because our hormone levels go up and down so much.
Okay.
So, and unfortunately, the way esters work and the way steroids work, within 24 to 36 hours of any injection, you're going to get peak blood values. And then they're going to degrade from that point. So there's always going to be an element of higher levels post-injection dropping off to a lower level pre-next injection. Ester and dose will determine what that period of time is. Now, personally, I run 250 milligrams of Sustanon once a fortnight, and I'm perfectly happy on that. My bloods do drop due getting close to the next injection, but that's part of a natural ebb and flow of hormones anyway. So I don't have an issue that they're getting lower end before I next inject.
Okay.
So there's always going to be an element of averages. The danger of injecting too frequently and keeping hormone levels very stable is that you'll then most likely, because if your hormone levels vary, then what happens is the estrogen conversion is based more on your mean, more on your average hormone level. So even if you peak at, say, 36 nmol, and then at the low end, you're down at 18 nmol before your next injection, the estrogen conversion will be based on something around the 24, 25 nmol range.
Yeah, okay.
But if you go up at 32 nmol and pretty much stay there because of how you would do your injection frequency, then your estrogen conversion is going to move up to that level because that's the mean, that's the average of your dosing. And the issue then is you then have to start adding estrogen control. So you're then having to start add more chemicals. When you're on TRT, you want a rough idea of where your levels are post-next injection and a rough idea of what your levels are, sorry, pre-next injection and a rough idea of what your levels are post-injection. But you don't need to be obsessed with trying to keep it at you know, high 20s, low 30s. For that duration of time, because that's actually going to be counterproductive for you. We're not designed to have hormone levels that work like that. The reason most of us feel it's like we're falling asleep at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is because our hormone levels have dropped substantially by that point. So it isn't natural to have them stable. And when you do have them stable long term, you build up problems, estrogen being one, prolactin being another. And the impact on lipids is greater and all sorts of little things that over great periods of time, i.e. years, can become issues. And the reason why you're seeing, especially in the States, you're seeing a lot of TRT protocols now include anti-estrogens is because of this obsession people have with keeping the levels buoyant and high and stable. Anti-estrogen is never prescribed in the UK or very rarely prescribed in the UK for TRT patients because you're lucky if you get one shot a fortnight. Most people get one shot every 3 weeks.
Right.
So estrogen levels are never a concern. And that's the big difference. That stability of hormone is what's creeping estrogen levels up in TRT patients. So going back to the question, it's more a case of what works for you.
There you go.
Now, there's several aspects to this. There is the convenience of when you inject. There is how you I mean, the problem I have with Sustanon is I'm very, very sensitive to testosterone injections. So I've never really been able to use propionate. it causes me bad, bad pip. So that element of the sauce just get me a little bit of a swelling when I inject, but it's not that bad, so it's not a major issue. But there's things like this that you need to factor into. And then it's just convenience of injection. And I would start off with a guideline of 250 mg of your chosen test length, test sip, or Sustanon. I would test 36 hours post, and then I'd test 14 days later.
With no other shots from there?
No other shots in between, okay. And then based your decision on that. If you find 36 hours later your levels are sky high, and you find that 2 weeks later your levels are dead low, then I would look at the option of 125 mg every week. And then repeat the tests 24 to 36 hours after your first injection and 24 hours before your next injection and see how your levels sit then.
Okay.
But there's going to be some variance, and it's not unhealthy for there not to be some variance.
Yeah. What do you think about the gels, the creams? Because from what I understand, you will get more of a realistic delivery to what your natural production is with the daily administration.
Yeah, you will, because you get the peak once the cream's absorbed, and then it drops off during the day, and then you get the repeat of the peak the next day. The only downside to the creams is the efficiency of that absorption.
Okay, sure.
And the other problem with the creams is they transfer.
Yeah, so your wife or your kids.
There has been cases, yes.
Sure.
Where a partner of someone using creams has started to manifest virilization.
AKA got jacked.
Grew a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... And what people don't realize is that little impacts over long period of times do result in big impacts.
Sure.
So when you're looking at doing something for the next 20, 30, 40 years, it does become an issue. It doesn't become an issue if you're just doing a TRT between two cycles and that's the end of it. But if you're going to be doing a TRT on a medical basis for a long period of time, then these little things can build up and become negative over time.
So part of his question, too, and this will apply to a lot of people, guys, because blasting and cruising is so popular now, to get back to TRT, how long would you wait post-cycle? Let's say he's just using test sip, we'll say, 750, and he comes off of that and he wants to go back to TRT. What would be the clearance time you would give it before you would begin those TRT shots?
Well, the problem with that is, even though the drugs have a half-life, the reality in a person is it can vary quite a deal.
Okay.
But I would suggest that something like that, you're going to be looking at, you're probably looking at somewhere around the 21-day mark when I'd look to have a quick test and see when my test levels were.
Okay.
2 weeks to 2 to 3 weeks test, and you're going to be pretty close at that point, I would suspect.
All right.
If you've been a very long-term user, you may find it quicker. And if you are extremely fat, you will also find it quicker.
Really? Why is that?
Fat people metabolize steroids a lot quicker than skinny people.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. I'll move on to the next question. This is from Big Beck 90. We're back over at the message board. He says, "Hey, guys. First of all, this show kicks ass. I appreciate all the info. Looking for some tips from you guys who have put on massive amounts of mass." That when he says you guys, he means you, Dave. Also, thank you for listening. How do you combine? How do you continue to eat when you don't have a strong appetite? Supplements or drugs you'd recommend? Currently running TRT dose. Will picking up the test help? Would adding HGH help? Been thinking about trying to do some, so looking into the biggest bang for my buck. Thanks again for the awesome show. As always, Advices Radio is killing it. Thank you, Big Beck. So yeah, just to be clear, I didn't read that super clearly. He's wondering if picking up the test dose would help with appetite, if growth hormone would help with the appetite, if there's anything else he can take Or of course, Dave, is there anything he could do nutritionally that would help with the appetite? I'm going to hedge you off because I know one thing you taught me that you've reiterated a couple times now was that you like to eat a lower fat diet so that food clears faster. You focus on the proteins and mostly carbs to grow, right?
Yes.
I'm learning from you.
There's a couple of things you can do. It depends how extreme he is with the food intake. So obviously low fat. The second thing you can do is reduce vegetable intake and start a green supplement.
That's right. I forgot that one.
Yeah. And then Dave, you can consume 5 kilos a day and 2 kilos or 1.5 kilos of that's vegetables. Then you're probably not going to need that many. Hmm. So you can bring that down to 200 grams or even less, put a green supplement in, and then you've got more volume of food you can dictate to carbs and proteins.
Okay.
MK677 is a good little supplement for appetite, but I would suggest that you run berberine with it because it can make you insulin resistant. It depends very much on the individual. Having said that, running a good quality GDA that contains berberine, I believe, will also help with the food. Because effectively, you're getting the most out of your own natural insulin levels. If you are at the absolute limit of your food, and when I say limit, this, let's be very clear on what I mean by this.
Yeah.
When you are force feeding to the point where you are regurgitating that food, and that's your absolute limit, then at that point, I would suggest that you can potentially look at running a small amount of insulin per meal.
Okay.
Otherwise, no.
That's pretty extreme.
And most people just physically don't have the stomach, and I mean that both figuratively and literally, to push food hard. It is difficult. And it does require sitting there and shoving food in your mouth that you don't want to eat. And it does require chewing on food that you don't want to chew on and squirreling it away with water. And you will be very bloated by the end of the day. And then the next morning you'll wake up, your stomach will be flat, and you start the whole process again. If you could look at liquid calories, so you could liquidize in some of your meal. Also look at your food sources. You may find that fish is a lot easier and you can consume more fish than you can beef.
That's true. I know I can.
So mix your protein sources up. And when you're starting to get to a high end, maybe it's a case of if you're trying to get 300 grams of a protein source in, go for 100 grams of beef and 200 grams of fish. 100 grams of chicken and 200 grams of fish. So, first of all, you're going to get a more complete amino profile going in there, but also your heavy side is on the protein source that's easily absorbed.
Nice.
Same with your carb sources. Some people get on really well with rice. Other people struggle with it and prefer potatoes. So look at your carb sources and play around with them and find out which ones of them you find easier to digest. What I find is a big key factor to high volume food is enjoyment of what you're eating.
No question.
And that may mean you becoming quite creative in the kitchen. So use herbs and spices, use different cooking methods. The air fryers, sweet potato wedges, all things like that covered in paprika, all things like that that make the consumption of the food less of a chore will also increase your appetite and ability to eat more food.
I think that's the number one thing that people I've worked with could improve on, because we want to be like hardcore. We just get it a one way idea in our head of how things are supposed to be done. And then they just prepare the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I agree. And we do. We unnecessarily eat bland food. I ate bland food because I'm shit at cooking it, and there was that much to cook. I couldn't be arsed with making all the preparations. So it was a case of I have to spend a long time sorting it out, or I just put up with it. And I was quite happy to put up with it.
Yeah.
but for others, it can make a massive difference. I mean, I know, just adding tomato sauce to or ketchup, I speak American, to to a meal transformed my ability to eat it.
Sure.
Even just getting a couple of dry Jacob's crackers, breaking them up and throwing them in to change the texture of what I was eating made it easier to consume it.
Sauce. That's ketchup. I like that. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So, you know, things like that can really, and you go for a low fat version. People say, oh, you can't use ketchup, it's got sugar in it. But if you're bulking and that sugar's within a meal of, you know, low GI foods, it's not going to be a major, major issue. You know, you're not going to have huge amounts of sugar because you're not going to end up with huge amounts of ketchup. So low-fat sauces can be quite helpful in getting larger amounts of food into you.
Yeah.
There's a few tricks you can employ, but ultimately you will come to the point where you've just got to force it in.
That makes sense. I like that. You got a lot of creativity to that one. You've had a lot of experience.
I've done all sorts to get food down. Absolutely, all sorts.
I bet.
Pushing the biggest amount, I was probably doing in excess of 1.5 to 2 liters of water a meal, not because I was needing the water, but because I was using it to swill the food down my stomach.
Yeah.
Because it was the only way I could get it out of my mouth and get it down my throat was to swill it down.
Oh, God. That's a lot, man.
But that's the extreme end as well, though. You know what I mean?
Did you find that the GHRP6 did help build your appetite up when you took it?
It wasn't. I didn't find it a dramatic effect for myself, but I have known many clients have a very dramatic effect off it.
I've had it work at times, occasionally, but nothing consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not so much myself, but I have had clients that have found it night and day.
Nice. Well, listen, Dave, we've got a few questions left here, but we've reached an hour. This is a good place to end the show. I think we've got a couple that we'll save for next time. And I encourage everybody to ask more, you know, come on over to form.advicesradio.com. And in the bodybuilding section, there is a thread stickied at the top for drugs and stuff with Dave Crossland. Dave, I know you gotta start dealing with this whole car situation, which I'm sorry for that. But what else do you have going on?
I'm at home tomorrow. So that's going to be predominantly clients. Which I've got a few spaces opened up because obviously people are skint and Christmas is coming, so I've had a few dropouts. And then Friday I am down to an RAA base called Saffron Walden, which is probably about 230 miles from me.
Okay.
And I'm going to need to swing by Birmingham, which isn't really on the way back, to be fair, but I'm going to have to make it work because I'm going to have to collect all my things out of my car.
That's not fun.
Weekend. Yeah, hey. Probably visit a bit of family over the weekend. Might end up doing a bit of car shopping. And then next week, I'm pretty much homeward based all week unless the military drops something on me. So it'll be a big catch up with clients running into Christmas. And then I've got a huge court report I've got to break the back of.
Hey, so this military thing that you're about to go do, how long does that presentation last?
It depends which version I give them.
Okay.
It has the potential to be 3 hours long.
Oh, wow. Man, what I would love to be able to just sit there and listen to that. That'd be fun.
You're a strange man. You really are, Scott.
It would be great, man. I'd love to check it out.
Most will opt for the hour to the hour and 15-minute version of everything.
I'd take the three-hour one if we could have a break. I'd need to get up and stretch my legs.
To be fair, I mean, the steroid one is an hour and 15 to an hour and 20 if I do the full one. The alcohol one is an hour, and the recreational drug one is an hour. But to be fair, on both the alcohol and the recreational drug, there's a little bit of overcooking it. So the hour and 21 or the hour and 10 with alcohol and drugs in. It's probably the more proficient of the two.
Okay.
He still gets the major point because the shorter one is very challenging. Squaddies are very good at sticking their hands up for things when they think they're being big and clever. They're absolutely shit at sticking hands up the thing if they think they're going to get caught for something. So I start the presentation off by asking a series of leading questions to get information out of them and don't say any more than it.
Okay.
And then we turn back to that later on, and they are then challenged on the answers to those questions. In fact, that because we discuss their consumption of alcohol. You know, have you ever got pissed so you can't remember what you did the night before? You ever drunk yourself sober?
I've done that, you know, at the start.
Yeah, I do a lot of that because it's a badge of honor in the military. And then when you get by to explaining how alcohol works in the brain and where alcohol is in the brain at the point that they're losing their memory or at the point where they feel that they're sober again, and how high risk that is, all of a sudden it all goes very, very quiet.
I bet.
And so when you get to the back end of the presentations, if you present them with a question, just nobody answers.
Okay.
But I do challenge them. I challenge their behavior. I challenge their thought process and what they do. And I challenge them to look at themselves.
Yeah.
And to look at one another.
But you do it from a caring place, though, which I think that's important thing here, you know?
It's just I ask them a series of simple questions, which I don't expect them to answer.
Yeah.
And then I just say, you know, at the end of it, if you in your head have thought yes or maybe to any of them, then you need to look at your relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, I like
that. What you decide to do off that is up to you. But there is plenty of help out there. The problem is not getting help. The problem is asking for it.
Yeah.
And so it is, and we deal with consent, and I drop in some real life scenarios of people that I know have fallen foul of consent due to a partner being drunk. And it sort of brings it home. When they start hearing actual names attached to things, it becomes less of a presentation and more of a fucking hell, you know, he knows someone that's gone through this.
Yeah.
He knows someone that took a lasso who was drunk, did the beast with two backs, and then got accused of rape and got charged and prosecuted for it. And the case I use is that the example I use, it was actually the defendant's own evidence in court that condemned him. Because he was challenged in court, and the guy was a very stand-up, very normal, very honest guy. He just thought his luck was in. And the judge asked him, did she give you consent? Can you honestly say, sat here in front of us today, she gave you consent? And he went, no, I can't, because she was drunk.
Yeah.
And that cost him 7 years of his life.
Wow.
And it's not just that, though. It's like I said to them, I said, what's your thoughts on someone who's a rapist? Those thoughts will be applied to you. Don't think because people know you, they'll think any differently. They won't. They'll still think you're a rapist because you've been convicted of being a rapist. They don't bother reading the case files. They don't bother reading the witness statements. They don't bother getting into all that. All they see is that newspaper article that says, John Smith convicted today of the rape of.
Yeah.
That's all they and I said, and that's the problem. I said, it's not just the sentence that's life destroying, it's the stigma.
Yeah, that's heavy, man. That sounds like you get heavy in that thing pretty quick, too.
Oh, we proper get in there with the stuff. And I've got some particularly nasty videos of people having severe bad reactions to certain drugs and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I pull from some life experience stuff as well. My daughter's got a bit of a drug problem, so I use that, and I can give them real-world family examples of what I've been through with my daughter.
Yeah. That's got to be. Well, maybe I don't want to sit through that then. It sounds intense. It sounds good, though.
It is, but I do think, you know, it's you're better hard-hitting and getting in there and giving them a slap than you are droning on about loads of scientific technicalities for 18, you know, for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
People just switch off.
Yeah.
It's got to keep, it's got to get them thinking and it's got to get them challenging themselves. Otherwise, it's ineffective.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's only for that hour I've got them in front of me, they look at their own consumption of alcohol and think, maybe.
It's seed. It's a seed then, you know?
And it is. It's just, I mean, I did one yesterday and I turned up and I was late because it wasn't me that was supposed to be doing the job, but the lad that was doing the job broke down.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me if I'd get over there and get it done. So I turned about 20 minutes late and the commander pulled me one side. He said, how quickly can you get through this? I said, I can get it out in an hour and 10. And he's like, oh, thank God. I said, why, what's up? He said, they're all out of the piss tonight. They're desperate to get out the door.
Hmm.
And that was a bit of a weird one because this lot are all just chomping at the bit to piss off because they want to go and get slaughtered.
Yeah, yeah. And then you set them up for that. That had to be...
It's their big Christmas bash. And then I'm stood in front of them going, well, basically, if you go out tonight, lads, you might kill your mate or you might kill yourself because this is what's going on.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, God. Talk about putting a downer on a Christmas party.
Right, right.
you do get the odd one that will come up to you afterwards and go, you know what, I think I might have a problem.
And that makes it worth it if you can change somebody.
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Well, let's get out of here, man. It's been fun as always, and I always appreciate having you on the show here.
Pleasure.
All right, guys. For another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you next time.
Voices Radio Network.